Gottlieb Douglas. How you doing, sir?
What are you doing in Scottsdale?
I have to meet with a bunch of the head coaches and athletic directors of college football. Here with Herb Street, McDonough, Brock Heward, and Todd Blackledge. And somehow I got an invite as well. So
awesome.
Do a little radio during the day and rub some shoulders with some of college football's finest at night. The Doug Gottlieb type of schedule.
No, that's a cool place to be. You learn so much more during that week than you do any other time. Guys are have their guard down. They tell you the real stuff. So Baker Mayfield, number one pick in the draft. We all saw that one coming, a couple years ago, right?
Yeah, I'm just glad I didn't say if he does, I'll eat poo like the old boy in Goldhammer in Cleveland. That's a rough promise.
I actually think this is a little bit like we talked about it, I'm going to say about a year and a couple months ago, maybe almost a year and a half ago, we talked about the Big 12 being down and what had to happen for the Big 12 to be up. And I know that the average draft position of the Big 12 players, I think, was like 118 this year as opposed to 140 last year. But this is a big thing for the league. Like, he's the only first-round draft pick. The only one. And he goes number one overall. And if he's a bust, it just becomes the narrative, right? Brandon Weeden, Bradford has had a better than I think people think career, but so much mired in injury. And there's been some disappointing parts. You just kind of look around, and I kind of think this, while it's in the short term a huge, huge win for OU, and obviously for Baker personally, there's a lot of pressure on his ability to succeed being drafted number one overall, especially considering how many people didn't have him rated as the top prospect.
Hey, Doug, here's the number real quick. Real quick, Mark, just the number for you. Big 12 quarterbacks in the first round, 160 and 218 and one overall. So a 42.3% winning percentage. So to your point, yes, Baker could help that. Patrick Mahomes could help those numbers too in Kansas City this year, Doug.
And I think Dorsey was part of that front office, and he drafted Mahomes as well. The thing that gives me the biggest pause with Baker, because I talked to some front office people, and they're all like, dude, football IQ off the charts. We think he's got great leadership skills. That's not going to be an issue. So some of the theatrics, it's not that big a deal with them. What is a big deal, though, is that he's been, he's had a better offensive line, better play calling at both places, had, great play calling, really good skill position players, and wasn't dealing with the best defenses and with pressure in his face, and can you deliver the mail from the pocket? And now you're going to Cleveland, that they got some nice talent. They got some Virginia, they went out and got Jarvis Landry, but they're not dealing from a talent superiority like you do in college football. They're a talent inferiority. And how do you, can you lead a team of guys who haven't won a game in over a year? It's going to be a big challenge. And then dealing with the Tyrod Taylor thing, right? Like Tyrod Taylor, with all of his flaws, he did take the Bills to the playoffs last year. And so, you got to kind of tread lightly when you walk into that building. So I think it's going to be fascinating to see.
Well, as being a walk-on in the past, I don't think he ever went to Tech and tried to overtake the room. He did start his first game there, or at Oklahoma the same way. I think he came in, and I think he's capable of biding his time and being in his place. You know what I'm saying? I think Tyrod Taylor would be an asset to him.
I don't think it's necessarily, but look, it's just got to be you're the number one pick is expected to play, and Baker Mayfield's he's what, 23 years old? I mean, he's not Darnold where he's 20. And so you don't bring in a 23-year-old kid to sit. So there's just, there's a way in which you got to kind of handle yourself. I thought the coolest thing, I don't even guess I saw the video, but it goes into the Browns equipment room. They're like, what number do you want? He's like, what's available? He's like, well, what do you want? Right? He's like, well, I've never gotten a pick. And when you think about it, he really didn't get to pick. Right? Like, walk-ons don't choose their numbers. They're given their numbers. And that's one of those, wow, I never even thought of that, right? Because when I was in college, I knew what number I wore in high school. I was wearing that number in college. I was kind of part of the deal. It wasn't even discussed, because I knew no one had worn it at either spot or no one had it. And so that was my number. And I thought that part was, the whole thing is fascinating to me. A two-time walk-on and a guy who, but he's three-time Heisman Trophy finalist and won the thing. And, you know, he's going to Cleveland where they can't win anything. And here's the guy that the best part about him is their ability to win on the road at OU. So I'm fascinated by it. I think it's a mistake. I think Darnold's better. I don't think it's that close between the two, but I get the Baker thing, and I'm personally rooting for him.
If he's able to have success and get Cleveland off the mat, then it will be – I mean, there's going to be a story made. It really – from that aspect of it, he couldn't have asked to go to a better place and take a 1-31 team from the past 2 years and try to make them somewhat relevant again. I mean, it kind of is right on the storyline that his career has been to this point.
Yep. And look, he's got some things working against him, not just in Cleveland, but, you know, Hugh, most people think Hugh is dead man walking. And now Hugh's really good with quarterbacks and really good at offenses. So maybe that's the plus side. But, you know, how do you deal with, and Dusty, you know this better than anybody, right? Like, how do you deal with, you come in 1 year and you got one system, and then year two, now you got another system. And you got to figure things out.
Well, I got to tell you, and I don't think he'll take this job, but I would have to think, and I've been reading a lot about, the NFL people are kind of infatuated with Lincoln Riley right now and his football IQ and his play calling ability. All 32 teams, I was reading an article that all 32 teams have gone in and tried to pick the brain of Lincoln Riley. And again, I don't think he's leaving Oklahoma, but if you're John Dorsey and you're firing Hugh Jackson after this year, wouldn't that be one of the first calls you're making?
Yeah, Lincoln and, Riley? You know, there's a pretty big advocate who has a pretty strong presence in the state of Ohio who might also pick up the phone and say that's a good hire, named Bob Stoops, right? Look, here's what's interesting is, and this in many ways relates to college basketball and how the NBA in many ways looks a little bit more like college and a little bit more like European basketball. Think about the NFL now, right? The NFL now is getting more and more to resemble the college game. It's a passing league. Passing league. Nobody cares about, you know, the gross rushing yards you give up, right? It's about yards per carry. And you know, you got to build your team with your quarterback, you know, protecting your quarterback, and then your back. If your back seven can't cover, you got no shot. And, you know, what does that remind you of? That reminds you of college football. You know, everybody's playing, you know, people playing the nickel. You can't play a 3-3-5 in the pros, but your base defense is basically your nickel. And that's a lot like coaching, frankly, in the Big 12. And so, yeah, I think the inventiveness that we've seen, Chip Kelly didn't work, but he didn't work because of his personality, not because he won 20 games his first 2 years when he was with the Philadelphia Eagles. He just couldn't get along with Howie Roseman. They had a power struggle, and, you know, then they had had injuries at quarterback, and they had a bad year, and they got rid of him. And then he was with San Francisco, and they had no talent, so they couldn't win anyway. But I'm with you. I think Lincoln Riley is one of those guys to which, you know, like Dabo Sweeney is a great personality, but he's not a breakthrough genius the way that Lincoln Riley is. And then, you know, if you look at what Brad Stevens is doing in the NBA, the idea that you can't do it with a college guy. No, you got to do it with the right college guy and the right system. And, you have to find the right place at the right time. And at some point, Cleveland will say, we're out of ideas with retread pro guys. Why not? I think that's a smart call to make.
All right, the Thunder are going to get rid of Melo, right? I mean, that's the only move Sam Presti can make.
I think you have to. I mean, he's just so not self-aware. You know, he's the only guy who thinks. I mean, I really think he thinks that if they get rid of him, that he'll have all these landing spots. Like, look, LeBron wanted wanted new players last year, and there was no talk of him going. And they're friends, you know. Houston, they didn't openly opine for him in Houston. Like, I think those guys, everybody kind of knows. And I think that's the first thing. And I think if you listen, if you parse Paul George's words, I think that's one of the things he's saying, right? Like, I don't think he's going to come back. I think he's going to go to L.A. But I do think that if Sam Presti comes in and goes, like, look, here's what we're going to do. We're going to buy out Carmelo, and we're going to, you know, we'll smooth it or whatever. Or we're going to figure this out. We're going to find a way. Like, I do think that's one they got to kind of take the bull by the horns. But Carmelo's statement that I read yesterday, which is, you know, he was basically a good soldier all year, but they weren't using him, and he has more to offer. That tells me he doesn't want to be there. And if he thinks that he should have a bigger role, then he obviously just has no awareness of where he wants. He doesn't want to come off the bench. Like, dude, where are you going to go? What good team are you going to go start on? You can't guard anybody, and you couldn't make open shots. So outside of that, and you're not. You know, he's the rebounding numbers that he had early in his career are a creation of the fact that, you know, he'd make sure that no one would get rebounds that he would get a free run at. He was never a great rebounder. He's fine.
Well, show me how unself-aware he is, Doug, is I think that he said halfway through the season that the shots he's getting are too easy. Like, I mean, he wants to back somebody down and take a fall-away jumper rather than an open three. I mean, that's ridiculous.
Here's what I said on my show, okay? I think he's like a Hummer, like an H2. Okay? He is a player from a foregone era. He had the best mid-range and the best post-up game, and he was a tremendous ball stopper. And like those players, you had to be so good to be a ball stopper in 2018 in the NBA. You're not. You got to be a ball mover. You got to be able to spread the floor. Can you shoot threes or can you get to the basket? And he can do neither. That's not what he does best. He is a mid-range jump shooter. He is a pull-up jump shooter. He is an ISO guy, and he is a ball stopper. And he's a non-defender at the three and at the four. Boy, you hope he doesn't get switched onto a point guard. You know, everybody switches in the NBA, and he can't guard. He struggles to guard his own position, let alone smaller positions. So he doesn't understand.
Real quickly, I was going to ask both of you. I haven't talked to Dusty about this. Did you see the shot chart of Game 6 in Utah? I mean, Utah, all
yes.
of their shots were either on the perimeter or at the basket. I mean, almost yes. all of them. Where Oklahoma City shot chart looked like somebody was trying to daub a bingo card for a blackout game. You know what I'm saying? They had more mid-range twos and crap shots than you'd ever seen. And so where does that start to change, Doug? Because I know that Billy Donovan preaches no mid-range jumpers, good shots at the rim, three-point opportunities, no long-range twos, which Melo never bought into. So how can he get this team to buy into that where they can be more effective?
I mean, look, it starts at the top, right? It starts with Russell Westbrook. It starts with at some point getting a hook, and when he goes into nobody touches the ball on a possession. I mean, the other thing Utah did was it wasn't just number of passes. They weren't just playing analytics basketball, you know, getting twos at the rim and shooting threes. They were also looking to attack, play early and play late, right? They were looking to attack in transition. They didn't have it, pull it out, run something, and then late in the shot clock, which of course exhausts the defense. Whereas, you know, Oklahoma City just comes down and plays, and sometimes they're just beholden upon Russell, who holds on to the ball too much. I mean, I think it starts at the top. I think there's got to be some soul searching from Russell and from Billy and from Sam Presti. Like, dude, I get that it would seem that no one else wanted the basketball, but one reason they don't want the basketball is because they've seen the looks that you give them, the pressure that Russell puts on his teammates, and they're all kind of trained to just constantly, like Raymond Felton, he looks shell-shocked out there. He did hit that 1-3, but there's too many times he passes up open ones because it feels like he's beholden to get the ball back to Russell and let him make a play. Like, that's not good basketball, and that's not going to ultimately win you games. So I think it starts at the top. You are who your best player is, and when your best player is selfish and your best player, you know, over-dribbles the basketball and takes mid, and when your best player is a mid-range jump shooter, then that's what your team is going to become.
So what's the answer then, Doug? I agree with everything you just said. So what's the answer? Because Mark and I mean, I think it's kind of unfair to just say fire Billy Donovan. I feel like he's in such a tough spot. He's having to deal with Russell. Now he's got to deal with Melo, and he's got to try to make all this work. He's had three different rosters in 3 years there. That said, what you're saying, it doesn't seem like whatever Billy is trying to relate to Russell to try to get that message you just talked about through, it's not getting through. So do you try a different coach? I mean, how do you get what you just said? How do you make that actually happen? How do you get Russell Westbrook to realize he's going to have to change some things about his game if they're ever going to take that next step?
I mean, there's one of two ways to do it. The first way is obviously you get rid of Billy and you bring in a coach and you give him a long-term deal, or you double down on Billy and you say, hey, Billy's going to be here for 5 years and we're going to give him X amount of money. He ain't going anywhere. So you're going to do it his way. And you bring him in and you say, look, Russell, when you were at your best was not when you won the MVP last year. That was out of necessity, right? When they went to the NBA Finals, James Harden was the point guard in the fourth quarter. And we have to find somebody who can sometimes move you off the basketball and who can give you a break, and so that you're not the first person that touches the ball. That was my thing, because right now they're just creating – he's becoming an Iverson, you know? He's just becoming a guy who so dominates the ball that there's nothing any. You might as well just create four defenders around him and just let him go. And on certain nights, he'll make shots. But I think, you know, look, you either bring in a new coach, but I don't know how a new coach solves anything because, you know, he doesn't know the landscape. What's the relationship like with Russell? Whereas the other way to do it is just simply double down on Billy Donovan and say, hey, look, Billy ain't going anywhere. So you're going to do it his way. And you got to empower Billy Donovan to, like, Billy, you know what? You're going to coach. You know, if you don't like Russell's act, sit him down. Yeah, he doesn't want to do what you want. Meanwhile, personnel-wise, you got to find somebody who can move him off the basketball. Because if you don't, you're beholden to that. And, you know, it's going to be the Russell show, which I know statistically and when the ball goes in, it's great. But that's not winning you a championship. That's not getting you close to a championship in the West.
The statistics do not tell the story of Russell Westbrook. I mean, they don't. They're masked, and a lot of fans have fallen in love with that, but they don't recognize what's going on elsewhere, which I think you described pretty well today.
There's a little bit of Trae Young to it, you know, and I know he's shooting higher numbers from two than Trae was, but it's the same thing. Like, you have to understand when you dominate the basketball the way that Russell does, the way that Trae did, you're going to have, you know, you can't statistically compare it to anything historically because we're playing higher possession games, you know, with more three-point shots, and all the numbers get skewed. It's like steroids. It's steroids for baseball, or now the juiced ball in baseball has skewed the stats. It's the same thing in basketball. You know, I mean, there's a reason. I'm not saying he's not tremendous, but they don't. You're right. They don't tell the story.
You got your Steelers gear, Doug? Pretty cool that Mason and James both go to Pittsburgh. A little later than I thought they'd go, but I think that's really neat that they're reunited together.
I think it is too, and I honestly, you know, the one thing that gives me pause is, you know, any of us have seen Mason in bad weather and bad division, you're going to be in bad weather. But if there's a strong arm quarterback whose body looks, you know, body looks like Mason's that can do it, that can teach him how to do it, you would think it would be Ben Roethlisberger. Whose dog is that?
Mark's got a dog.
That's Snarls Barkley. He's pretty cute at the beginning, but he's outgrowing himself.
Seriously, Mark, like what is going on? You got a deer right in the back? Yeah, it is pretty cool. I think it's really cool. I think James Washington's a stud. I'm you know, the NFL guys think that Mason's kind of stiff and that he's a product of the offense and of the talent around him, but you know, the good thing is that it's an offense that'll be built to a guy with a similar skill set to his. And the other good news is, you know, Ben Roethlisberger doesn't play 16 games. He never plays 16 games. He's always kind of hurt. So if he can get ready and he gets inserted in there and shows he can play, that's an organization that runs the football. That's an organization that has guys around them that can make you look good. And, you know, and the comfort level of playing with James Washington would be pretty awesome.
No doubt. Hey, Doug, great stuff today. Really appreciate it, man.
Anytime, fellas. Enjoy Scottsdale.
Doug Gottlieb.